Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, to talk TV. We'll discuss that much-anticipated Mad Men finale, which aired last week. We'll take a look at new Netflix septuagenarian comedy Grace and Frankie. And we head to the glitziest royal court around to find a new queen in RuPaul's Drag Race. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Alice. Great to have you with us as ever. Let's start the show with the end of, well, one of the most successful TV series of the past decade, Mad Men.
That's right, yeah.
If our listeners haven't seen it or haven't seen the finale, they may need to put this on mute for a couple of minutes
while we talk about it. Although I would argue that Mad Men is the most dramatic show, which you can't really spoiler. But yes.
There you go.
If you're kind of... In the end of season 7, you may want to switch off.
Don't switch off, but just go away for a minute and then come back. Let's talk about the finale. It did air last week.
Yeah.
It is interesting when you get these sort of iconic programmes, people start to anticipate, how are they going to end it? What are the devices? Will there be narrative tricks? Sometimes people are disappointed. What did you make of the conclusion? Was it a sort of satisfying way to end?
It really was. I was expecting, knowing what Matt Wiener often does with Mad Men and... you know, leaves things very ambiguous. I was expecting to feel a bit like, at the end of it. And I was really surprised to be very satisfied and felt that he'd really tied it up in a neat bow. And of course, there are a lot of fans who think that, I believe there are accusations of it being a bit rom-commy, which I thought were unfair. But no, I think he did a really good job. I think he did it justice.
Let's have a little listen, just so that we'll refresh people's memory as to how indeed it did all come to that thrilling climax.
Mother, son, we greet you and are thankful for the sweetness of the earth. The new day brings new hope. Lives we've led, the lives we've yet to lead. New day, new ideas, a new you.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle dove.
The strains of that famous commercial for Coca-Cola, of course, which closed out Mad Men. Alice, a lot of people had actually sort of almost guessed that that was going to be the closing gambit. Do you think that's a bit of a problem with people second guessing, even if they're right? Does it detract from the sort of dramatic moment?
I don't think so, because I think that's just, you know, recognizing how in keeping with the time period that Mad Men has always been, they've always sort of used political and cultural moments in history to base their show around. And that was such an influential advert. And I think even if you knew it was happening, there were a few visual cues in the ending which made it open for debate. So one of the women who features quite prominently in that advert was almost identical to the receptionist at the retreat where Don goes. So that's the question of how is she in the advert unless Don is involved in making the advert, and then we don't know whether he's gone back or not to the agency.
Often people talk about, you know, the measure of these great programs, about whether you get the feeling that they go beyond the structure of the show. So you kind of imagine these narratives continuing to play out, but you just don't get to watch it on TV. Do you think Mad Men is in that category of TV drama?
Oh, I totally imagine Peggy running her own, like, her own agency in the 80s and being this big hotshot, and Sally Draper being some kind of Joan Jett-style, you know, rock queen. And, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just a bit sad, but I think it definitely, in a way, it fitted in so well with the time and the history of that era that you can totally imagine it existing contemporaneously as well.
Now, there will be some people who've managed to studiously avoid Mad Men throughout all of the years.
Right.
They will have found a way somehow. We don't know. What would you say to them? Is this a show they need to watch, you know, get the box sets, catch up, whatever, because it is in the pantheon of great TV series?
Yeah, I mean, I was chatting to someone just today who was sort of saying, like, this is the greatest TV show that will ever be made in my lifetime. And I was just like, you know, I never like to put these labels on things. But The one thing I would say is that it's not a heavy plot-driven show, and a lot of people would, you know, they switched off because they found it boring. I think if you had the box set, then you would be able to binge on it quite delightfully.
And binging on TV is what we're all about.
Right, that's exactly.
Alice's view on Mad Men, which is finished, which you can celebrate or weep about. Right. It's a tragedy, depending on how you look at things. Let's move on to a new recent Netflix series, Grace and Frankie. This is the story of two women, a retired cosmetics mogul and a hippie art teacher whose lives are turned upside down when they discover that their husbands have fallen in love. The series follows the women who've never really liked each other as they support each other through the emotional ride through this next dramatic chapter of their lives. In fact, I think we might start by hearing a little of the show to get into the spirit. Here's a clip. This is the moment that Grace's two daughters learn about their father's sexuality. Let's have a listen.
Oh my God, what am I going to tell my kids?
Why don't you start with, do you know where poop comes from?
Oh.
How am I in trouble right now? Sorry, Dad.
Look, I'm sorry you had to find out this way, and I know it's a shock, but honestly, it was killing me.
This is why I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to fall apart in front of you.
No, it's okay, Mom. It's a fall apart kind of a thing. Mom, what can I do for you?
Nothing.
How about a Valium? Okay.
That's a bit of a clip from Grace and Frankie. So, Alice, tell us about this, because there's voices and performances, characters, faces that will be very familiar to
right.
people, established players. But what sort of a performance do they turn in this?
Well, this is the funny thing, because when I remember when this was first announced, then everyone was instantly like, where's Dolly Parton? This is just like 9 to 5, the 2015 edition, you know? Depressingly, there is no Dolly Parton in it. But Jane Fonda is very good. She's been doing a load of press around it, and I feel like it really genuinely is a new sort of part of her career, and so is Lily Tomlin. They're both excellent. I think they're really addressing that kind of, you know, older market, older actresses, you know, being represented on TV in a kind of lively, funny, realistic way. It's interesting that earlier we were talking about, you know, binging, and Netflix shows have always been so binge heavy. I'm not sure this fits into that model. It's a kind of take it or leave it. There are some very funny moments in it. But I think it's, you know, as revolutionary as some of the other Netflix originals that they've been putting out, just because we haven't seen, you know, actors of this age doing that kind of thing on TV before.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because often people say, look, you know, one of the reasons we don't see, you know, actors and actresses in particular, actually, of a certain age, is because the great parts aren't written for them. There's not great writing for for older people, with some notable exceptions, of course. But do you think this can kind of show the way? Is it sufficiently potent? Is it sort of powerful enough that it'll say to people, hey, look, do you know what? This is a demographic, not that just that we can speak to with the programme, but that we can make programmes about as well.
Right. I mean, there's been a bit of that going on in British television over the last year. So things like Last Tango in Halifax have been incredibly successful. But the interesting thing is that Grace and Frankie comes from one of the writers of Friends, which is Marta Kaufman. And so it is irreverent. It is funny. You know, you hear, you know, just like that joke you heard in the clip, there's some fairly blue jokes in there you wouldn't expect with people of that age to be having fun with. And in that way, it's really refreshing. I think it pales in comparison to Transparent, which is the Amazon originals about a transgender father, not because of the writing or the acting, but so much as the way they've tried to fit it into a slightly dated sitcom format.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned Marta Kaufman there, and I know that Martin Sheen, it's funny you talk about the jokes that are kind of slightly beyond the pale. He's a very sort of, you know, famously kind of liberal character, but he describes himself as being slightly prudish, and he's even had, according to some of the newspaper reports you read, some issues with some of the kind of racier material. A couple of things he said, oh, I'm not going to stand next to, and there was some sort of bizarre phallus bucking bronco
yes, there was
the mind boggles but it is interesting, isn't it, watching these kind of cultural collisions. And presumably Martin Sheen, despite his prudish tendencies, as he would say, he definitely sort of gets into the spirit of the enterprise.
I mean, he gets on with kissing his male co-star, as I'm sure he's kissed many female co-stars in the past. And I do think we need these representations on TV. We see, you know, actually recently with Cucumber That was another representation of, you know, middle-aged homosexual relationships, and that caused kind of more of a splash than you'd expect it to. It's good that there are more of them on telly, even if they're not maybe as funny or lighthearted as maybe we'd want them to be.
No, I guess maybe some, you know, a more small-c conservative potential viewer might say, oh, this sounds a bit sort of racy and challenging
right.
for me. But do you think this is a programme that does deal with ageing and the challenges of getting older and how relationships change for older people as they do with anyone else? There are certain sort of, I don't know, truths in it that are not necessarily just about this key narrative right. driver. It still has a broader relevance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the two women come in really well, because obviously Jane Fonda, no stranger to plastic surgery herself, and she's the face of this cosmetics brand. And there's this brilliant scene in the first episode where you see her sitting in front of a mirror and she's taking all her hair pieces out and her kind of things which literally pin her skin back. And she hides them all in a drawer away from when her newly-to-be ex-husband appears. And the fact that that's hidden from even her ex-husband. I thought that was a really clever moment.
Clever moments are plenty in Grace and Frankie, available to watch or binge on, in Alice's words, on Netflix across many regions. Now, let's end with a bit of reality television. RuPaul, one of the most famous drag queens in the world, and RuPaul's Drag Race is his competition to find a new queen. Now in its seventh season, we're approaching the finale on Monday. Alice, perhaps you should bring our listeners kind of up to speed if they've somehow been, again, avoiding this one. What kind of position does this occupy in the contemporary cultural firmament?
An increasingly big one. I mean, there's a lot of people I'm still kind of preaching the word of RuPaul to on a daily basis. And I always say it's like America's Next Top Model, but with drag queens, you know. And it's what's been interesting is that basically Netflix acquired it maybe 18 months ago, and that allowed what was a very niche cable channel show to be kind of brought to loads of other territories, and you could binge on it, and it's perfect binge viewing. But the new seventh season, you've really noticed a difference in the fact that a lot of people are reporting on it. There's a lot of think pieces going on about it. It is a really important show, I think, even though it may seem a bit jangly and glittery from the outset.
Well, there is something, I mean, people often say that there's a sort of a admittedly maybe glorious, but a chaotic, uneven quality to the shows
right.
at times. I mean, do you think that's unfair? Or do you think maybe that there's too much analysis? Is there over-analysis happening of something that is actually, you know, it's shiny floor, it's RuPaul, it's drag queens, it is just fun? Are people kind of adding too much thought into this?
I think people are always going to kind of associate meaning to it because it is the first show of its kind that deals with issues like drag, you know, like in some instances, some of the queens have come out as transgender. There are big issues at the heart of this. And for many people, it's an introduction to the drag world that you may never have seen before. So people are going to attach meaning to it that maybe it doesn't necessarily deserve. But I think it should be praised for what it does, even though there are, you know, people have been offended by certain things and the way it's treated.
And when you get a show like this that maybe does run, I mean, who knows, maybe it runs longer, perhaps even than some of the people involved at the beginning might have hoped.
Right.
Does it necessarily then have to change? Of course, people look to add in things to change the structure or elements of it. But do you think it's interesting also as a from a critical standpoint to watch the sort of evolution of a show as it changes, as the protagonists, the characters, the people who are sort of running the mayhem,
yeah.
How all of that changes as time passes?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of noticed that it's kind of changed in the way that a lot of these talent shows do, the same way that if you watch an early episode of Pop Idol, it looks like it was filmed in someone's back garden, you know. Like, the early shows of RuPaul were done on such a shoestring, and now they have spin-off shows and they have podcasts, and it's a much flashier, and they've clearly honed which games work and which don't, and they've kind of almost become a meme of the bits which work. So that is interesting, but I don't think they've kind of changed with regards to the taste issue at all. It's just normal TV production.
And this show, it's the finale of this season, but I understand it's continuing on. Is that not right?
I believe so.
And is this one of these formats that you think will run and run and run? Is there just some kind of chemistry? There's something in the sort of TV waters that just means people can't turn away from this?
I think the thing which is really nice about it is that it's very loving. You know, obviously in the UK, we've had like the Simon Cowell snark factor, and then he's tried to make that work in America and it just doesn't. And so you've, of course, got the cattiness and the bitchiness, and that's all very entertaining, but it's ultimately a celebratory show. And I think people just really love watching that. And also the contestants at the top of their game, and they just get better. So you're not watching people mess things up on purpose. Like, they're really, really good. So, yeah.
You can celebrate with RuPaul and friends. Season finale of RuPaul's Drag Race on Logo TV next Monday. That's the 1st of June. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Alice Vincent, thanks as ever for being with us. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks to our producer, Holly Fisher, and researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again tomorrow for this week's book review. Parul Segal will be on the line. But for now, thanks very much for tuning in.